Like
I don't understand why you have to dig so deep into it.
All right, ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to, well, this is supposed to be the midweek wrap, but I think it's, what did you call it?
It's got a precedential precedence.
It's a new one.
Yeah, it's a rare one.
Well, it definitely, we are coming off the fresh off the State of the Union, the first official State of the Union address by the President Donald Trump, the President of the United States. All right. So I'm prefacing this entire podcast on, if you didn't know, we try to be centrist here. That's the whole point.
But let's give our blanket, our pat political standing. What's the easy one? Your idol and your standing, mine and mine.
Yeah, I am more center left, for sure. And I think for the way that this podcast works and the beauty of it is I think you stand a little bit more center right, but we meet in the middle. And getting in
what I was alluding to there with the idol thing is,
oh yes, I am a my idols, my political ideological idols is RFK, Robert F. Kennedy, and yours is of course the late Richard Nixon, President Richard Nixon,
the ignominious, the one and only Richard Milhouse Nixon. One, yes,
but oddly enough, I think as people will find over time, there are commonalities there that you'd be surprised are there. And that doesn't mean that they agree.
He and his brother were buddies.
Yeah, they aren't.
Jack buddies.
Yeah, I'm not saying that they're best friends or anything. Or
he and Bobby were nowhere near friends.
No, not at all. However, with that being said,
it's just a little background. I think it makes it makes it easily, not necessarily kosher, but it gives people, anybody with any understanding. I mean, I remember when I first told my dad that, you know, he was like, wow.
Yeah. Well, okay. So let's just.
Enough comments. So yeah. Anyway.
So let's get into this State of the Union. So this, we did a State of the Union, pre-State of the Union in our last podcast episode. Now, if you've already listened to the State of the Union, of course, I would ask you and challenge you and implore you to go back and listen to the last podcast episode. However, we have now listened to the State of the Union and we're driving forward. We did highlight a few things that we wanted to, it wasn't that we wanted to hear him say, what was what we thought he would talk about. And then what we really outlined was how we hoped he would frame it. And I'm sorry, but I feel like the speech was a lost, he had a moment that he lost, and it was a missed moment and missed opportunity for the unification that he was looking for and the true policy that could have been either policy or, and I realize the State of the Union isn't something that's just, it's supposed to be a speech about policy, but he missed the ability to unify both parties. And I mean that by, and we'll talk about several of these topics, but the speech itself to me sounded, it had undertones of nationalism and populism. I liked how he did talk to the American people, but really, like a couple news outlets have already alluded to, you know, some of the more important things surrounding this speech were what weren't talked about. And we'll get into that, and I'll tell you what I mean by that. So I do, of course, everyone's talking about how great a job the president did by bringing these personal stories into the State of the Union and to honor truly great Americans and people that have struggled and had hardships. Now, my issue with that, and I'm not the speechwriter, it's not my State of the Union, my issue is where there could have been more substance, it was replaced by many minutes and many moments honoring these great Americans. I am not discounting, and I'm going, like, obviously this is on record, I think these are amazing Americans, these stories are worth hearing, but I felt like there could have been more substance from the president on what is going on in America today. And
how so?
Okay, so first off, like I said before, this speech had some nationalistic tones. It did. And right off the bat, I'll tell you what bothered me most. And I've said it before. and it just came out more in this speech. And that is categorizing Dreamers as MS-13 gang members.
And I mean, go ahead, but okay. I don't know that that's right. entirely fair summation.
Okay, well, so just bear with me here.
Okay, so I'm sorry.
He mentioned almost more than he did Dreamers himself as a topic. He mentioned MS-13 gangs more than the actual substance of immigration. At least it sounded like it to me.
And numerically, that is correct. Thus far, yes. He did mention MS-13 more times than he said the word Dreamers.
So here's the problem with that. And, okay, and Rick Santorum said it on CNN, and I'll give it to him. Yes, to blanket all Dreamers as valedictorians and amazing, all are amazing Americans, and they strive to have the white picket fence. I get that. That's not the reality. However, you're underscoring the majority of the population by mentioning MS-13 more than you had to. We know it's a problem. Everyone knows MS-13 is a problem. But when you have people that are tuning into this who aren't willing to do the research, who are willing to take whatever he says at point blank, what you're doing is categorizing Dreamers as MS-13 gang members. You're categorizing them and lumping them in to undesirable people in this country. I don't care if that wasn't what the message was supposed to be. It's sort of like, it's like an analogy. Or if I were to do something, where if I were to say, let's just pick a demographic, high school teenage girls, and hold on. That's a horrible thing. I'm not going to do that. High school teenage boys. We'll give you that because they're that's better. That's a better because I'm thought processing here. So
you gotta be careful. Start.
Thank you. This is a burning the candle at both ends kind of day. So thanks for being there for me. Okay. So this is called priming. It's done and used in psychology, and we do it all the time. It's what you see in marketing when you look at a picture
and there's a confirmation bias.
It's a confirmation bias. It leads into something that you're not seeing. So, like for example, FedEx has an arrow through the FedEx, and you don't see it point blank. It's something you can't tell, but it's there. And when you do see it, you see it. Or for example, in the movie that Will Smith did, where he was gambling with the high stakes gambler at the Super Bowl, and they placed the number 10 all over the stadium and had him look out and pick a number, and Will Smith, by just psychology and priming, guessed that as the right number that he was looking at. So it's called priming. It happens to every single human being. And so when you give the State of the Union address, you're priming Americans, you're priming your base to pair Dreamers as MS-13 gang members. Now, I know you could disagree, or people will disagree with this and say, well, some of them
just
are.
Just a question when you're done. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Yeah, no, go ahead.
Well, and this is merely a question. How many of his base, percentage-wise, just throw this out. I know this isn't scientific. How many of his base and otherwise, percentage-wise, are seeing impaired? Meaning, or I'll reframe that, didn't actually watch the speech.
Well, I have no idea, but
I mean, just a guess. I mean, do you think it's fair to say that 75% of the people listening to it watched it or were able to see it?
That's a good question.
Is that fair? 75-80%
listened to it instead of watched it?
No, I'm saying saw it with their eyes if they were able to, you know, if they weren't blind and listening by the radio. Then they watched it, right?
Yes, that's fair.
Okay, so second half of this question here, and it's this is not sarcasm. So do you think they put two and two together? I thought it was brilliant in terms of answering this, of having non-white Americans presented as the heroes. what I'm driving at?
I see what you're driving at, and it was a smart move. And I don't mean that smart in the sense, I'm not saying smart, like I'm being a smart ass about it, but it was a wise move. It was a good move. I think that is a unifying move. I think that's something I looked at and I was like, wow, I think both Sarah and I were watching, and the people that were, I mean, he honored the whole spectrum of Americans.
That kind of address what you're getting at though? In the sense that these people didn't look like, for those that didn't see it, these were four non-white Americans. I'll put it that way.
Yeah. So
Hispanics,
I see
that clearly goes against what is primarily his red meat base. No,
it's true. It does go against, and I was happy to see that. I think it isn't okay. So how do I frame this? It is good to see that sort of spectrum in Americans honored, because that truly represents America. There are heroes that are white. There are heroes that are black. There's heroes that are Asian. There's heroes from every spectrum. And I'm glad that he honored that. However, and I'm using this as an example when I talk about,
I feel like that didn't match the rhetoric.
Who he honors, those are true American heroes. I mean, those are true stories. And I know people will say, well, MS-13 is true. Yes, it is. But, it's almost to me apples and oranges, because this is the platform is to honor these Americans and show that America is great, that we're all great, minus our skin color, you know, or besides our skin color, besides our creed, our sex, our gender, our identity.
But you feel like that didn't even it out.
Because there shouldn't have to be an evening out. There shouldn't have to be.
Fair enough.
Because there's like Kennedy said John Kennedy, yes, in his dissent, if you will, to this, he said, we choose both. We're not pitting one against the other. We're not sacrificing one for another. We don't have to sacrifice the coast to have the heartland. We don't need to sacrifice security for welfare security and safety nets. And what I'm saying is you can't it doesn't cancel it out when you portray the honest, true spectrum of heroes in America and then prime the rest of America to categorize dreamers as MS-13 gang members or murderers and people that perpetuate crime. And that's where this isn't like the one issue I'm fixated on. This is the speech. This is the look at all the
immigration is the speech.
No. I said it's not. It's the analogy of that is the entire
speech. Okay. I see what you mean.
Yeah, the analogy of that is the entire speech. I mean, when you ask, did Donald Trump unify America? Did he have the opportunity to unify?
Absolutely.
I think he wanted to, and he may feel that he did. But
speechwriters let him down.
He may think that he had a truly unifying speech. And the fact is, when he wakes up tomorrow, I think he'll find that, well, and maybe Americans, who don't follow politics but tune into the State of the Union and tune into things like this will think it was unifying. But if you've been following the news, if you've been digging into these topics, if you've been talking about it the way we've been talking about it at length for over 6 or 7 months, it isn't unifying. Excuse me. It isn't unifying. So like, for example, on immigration, he had these four pillars. His four pillars are a path to citizenship for 1.8 million illegal immigrants. That's
the cap over what the Democrats asked for, by the way.
It is. The second one is full border security. That's a border wall and ICE. He's ending catch and release, which is exactly what it sounds like.
It's primarily aimed at sanctuary cities.
Yes. And I mean, he said it with terrorists as well. We're done releasing people and putting them back into society. And then he's going to end.
We have referenced the fact we traded five members of terrorist organizations for Goldberg Dahl.
Yes.
Anyway.
Yeah, we did. Ending visa lottery and ending chain migration. So here's the thing. He had a chance here. Like we specifically laid out, you eloquently and articulately laid out a framework for how the President of the United States could go in front of the American people and those who represent them in the hall there and in that chamber and say, look, we're all Americans and we want to make you Americans too. And this is the way we're going to do it, but here's also what we are going to do. So there are some hard lines. Now, he did say that we need to compromise. He did say that not both sides aren't going to get everything they want.
And he did say he wants a path to citizenship. I was I was surprised to hear that phrase. I will give him that.
Yes, he did say that. But what he didn't do, though, was address Democrats specifically and address Republicans specifically and say, this is what you may not get everything you want, but this is what I want you to get. This is what I agree with you on. And then go to the other side and say the same exact thing. He said, this is your job for the American people, for these dreamers, to come together and get something done. Not lay out this four-pillar path towards compromise. I mean,
see, and I had hoped he would do the exact opposite. And I know I didn't spell this out. And again, I'm not being paid by anybody to be a political consultant, so take what I say with a grain of salt. But maybe that's precisely why they should call me. But
yeah,
I really felt like he should have gone the opposite way and said, look, and I would have taken a moment. I would say, Mr. President, take a moment to look at each side of the aisle so that everybody knows you're looking at the two major parties in the country and say, now I want to look beyond this. And I want to say, when I say get things done or let's get some things done, here's what I'm talking about. I would have let the American people know enough of this BS, enough of holding this issue over for midterms.
Yeah.
And that's, I mean, there's no other explanation for why the Democrats rejected an offer that was superior to what they wanted.
Yeah. Maybe part of my issue with talking about something like this immediately after is there's visceral responses that I have, and maybe tomorrow I'll wake up and be like, damn, I really should have thought that out a little differently.
You're on point.
I just...
It was a missed opportunity.
It was a missed opportunity. So
the other side of that is this a missed opportunity with the America that's already said doesn't matter what he does? Maybe not. But I think there's plenty of people in the middle ground here that were listening.
So, and I think there are. However, there is always an opportunity to extend the olive leaf, or the branch, rather. There's always, you should always be striving.
Just one leaf.
Yeah, just one. You should always be striving to bring the other side to the table. And you know that in leadership. You don't alienate another side. I'm not saying he alienated another side. That's not my point. What I mean is,
he didn't bend over backwards to bring them over.
No, most definitely not. When you when liberals, I mean liberals, were listening to this speech, there's a couple things that they're looking for. One, obviously, just a train wreck. That's off script, off teleprompter.
Just didn't happen. Obviously,
explosion didn't happen. The next thing they're looking for are confirmation biases. That this man is evil, this man's a troll, this man's racist, XYZ. They're looking for those.
That's why I groaned when MS-13 got brought up.
Yes. But there's something
that... And the world was added.
Yes. There's one more thing that I think, you know, liberals or people that vehemently disagree with this president are subtly hoping for, and maybe almost subconsciously. And that's for something to come out of his mouth that they are surprised, that they can get behind, that maybe there's something in there, that old Democratic aligned Donald Trump, something that he'll say where we can point to, or they say, a proverbial we, they can point to and say, yes, that I can get on board with that. That's it. And he missed the boat on immigration with that. And for example, did he have to do this? He went and he went after the national anthem.
Missed the boat on immigration. I'm glad you said that.
Yeah, I did say that. All right. He went after the national anthem. He specifically said that is why we stand for the national anthem. Discounting and alienating an entire population of people that have a fairly justified cause to use that as a First Amendment right for protest. And that's not unifying. Did he have to say that? No. Absolutely not. It panders to a base. It panders to those who feel that they're inherently patriotic, and anyone that doesn't align with their values of patriotism is not patriotic and is a almost second class American citizen. So there's that. Then there's Donald Trump that surprises me with a juxtaposition to reforming the prison system out of like left field.
That was. I'll say a pleasant surprise.
It was. Like going through my list of things, this is under the category of I've got it circled as.
Yeah, I got three pages of notes. Yeah, it was interesting.
This is circled the didn't see that one coming section. And
definitely.
American prison reform was definitely not there in any. I was very surprised to hear that. But, you know, this is what's odd about the speech. There's these blatant attacks on groups of Americans. I mean,
Wait.
Okay.
Blatant attacks.
Okay. Yes.
Go ahead. I want you to finish. Okay. But I just want you to remember those words.
Blatant attack. This is a verbal blatant attack.
No, you said plural attacks.
Did I? Okay.
Go ahead. So, by all means.
When you call out when you're trying to unify a country that feels like racial tensions are higher than they have ever been in a very long time, when you go ahead and call people out for their First Amendment right and protest, i.e. the national anthem, that is...
You mean Colin Kaepernick.
Well, yeah, and how about the NFL, essentially, or... pro basketball players.
I didn't know everybody was kneeling, but continue.
I would say it's beyond Colin Kaepernick. Maybe he's the figurehead for the movement. Fair enough. You alienate. That's what you do. I mean, this was a chance to unify racial tensions. This was a chance to address those horrible issues. This was a chance to acknowledge that there are inherent biases in policing. And I mean, you're not really calling out cops. You're just saying that's what it is. And I'm acknowledging that, yes, not all people that come across the border are valedictorians and are going to be great Americans. That's just not the case. However, you don't have to go out of your way to specifically call out a fairly nonviolent, if I would dare say, group of people who are...
So is that group of people athletes? Because I know you're not categorizing all athletes as black people.
No, I'm not.
Okay. So I'm athletes saying, and Hispanics.
How about athletes and people that feel strongly about the reasons that these athletes are protesting?
Okay, so them and Hispanic immigrants.
So, sure, Hispanic immigrants.
I'm shocked to hear that labeled a blatant attack.
What is it though? Then what? I don't know what else it would be.
If that's what that is, man, I've been through many a crucible in my life.
Sure. Okay. Maybe blatant attack is my visceral response.
I get it. That's your visceral response. We're all entitled to them. I was just a little stunned to hear that. But
okay,
I think it was a missed moment.
How about shot? A shot at these? It's a shot
across the bow, huh?
Or an elbow punch, if you will, wasn't necessary.
I didn't think, you know what, I'll meet you there. I didn't think it was necessary. I felt like, as he first began to touch on that issue, I thought, okay. And he did end up saying it. He ended up saying a path to citizenship, which I will say I was shocked to hear that exact wording. Unfortunately, well, one of my footnotes here I'll say is that beyond Stephen Miller, there was supposedly H.R. McAuliffe, a number of people ended up being speechwriters on this. With President Trump throwing at tidbits, and I don't mean this towards him, I mean towards there being a number of speechwriters.
Yeah.
It showed. Because I think there was probably multiple somebodies fighting against the sentence, or the phrase rather, path to citizenship. Because of how buried it got by what was around it. It really felt like that was, and it was a line that he delivered well, and I think he means it well.
I agree with you. I do.
Unfortunately, it got buried amidst, I mean, I groaned when MS-13 came up. Not because that's not a problem, and not because that's not a tragedy. What happened to those two young ladies represented by their four parents tonight? But
horrific tragedy.
He outnumbered, the speech outnumbered dreamers.
Yes.
And I liked the phrase, and that was a good zing for his base and towards opponents of national, you know, American citizens or dreamers too. Good statement. Okay. I liked it.
Yes.
All right. But unfortunately, when he outnumbers Dreamers with the amount of times that he mentioned, yes, and the nefarious, notorious gang, MS-13, it comes off as more of what he talked about in his announcement speech, his campaign mm-hmm. opener being, and it was a true statement, okay? I'll say it, yeah, go ahead, castigate me for it, but let's face it, doctors and lawyers and nuclear scientists are not climbing under, you know, down tunnels, and they're not sneaking into the country, okay?
Yeah, you're very right.
Well, he said it, but I'm agreeing with it.
Well, yeah, exactly.
Unfortunately, excuse me, unfortunately, that's what this sounded like it was more of, and that's not what was needed tonight, not in this moment. And that's why I say when it was, it didn't juxtapose, it surrounded the phrase path to citizenship. It felt like somehow some moderate got that phrase snuck in, and he delivered it so well. It's like, you really got hamstrung here, didn't you?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, okay, so let me propose this. If he had talked about Dreamers, okay, and then almost had like a side note, like, hey, you know, I really want this path to citizenship. 1.8 million people. I'm being conciliatory here. Talk about Dreamers as being Americans too. Americans are Dreamers. And then said, look, I also want to, you know, my second pillar here is border security. And I want a wall because I want it. And I also want border security beyond a wall because we have gangs from Latin America like MS-13 who are infiltrating our cities and putting all Americans and Dreamers and undocumented citizens at undue risk. If he had framed it that way, if he had just made it as a side note, hey, by the way, there's also this thing I want everyone to be aware of and why we need more border security, you know, I you could have separated the two entirely.
And I would have had it in two completely different sections. I would not have at all connected Dreamers with this. You could have still talked about the four parents that were there of these two wonderful young ladies, I'm sure.
Mm-hmm.
Horrifically murdered. I agree. And it would have fed into, but again, I already said how I would have framed this.
Yeah.
I mean, he could have framed this to his red meat for people that weren't here on Monday. He could have framed it that, hey, we want every American to pay their fair share. We want a path to citizenship. And so for these individuals, we want to get them registered, have a social security number, have them pay their taxes so they can pay their debt to society too, just like all of us do.
Mm-hmm.
And that would have been a winning argument. And he could have framed it this way. It's a missed moment here.
Mm-hmm.
And I feel like maybe too many hands, you know, there were too many, as Chief Arnold once said, and he looked at me and he was talking about Five Center, of course, our ward in D.C., but he said, you know what the problem here is, Devinny? And I'm going, well, Chief, I've heard a number of versions of that.
Hmm.
But he said, there's too many chefs and not enough ingredients.
Hmm.
That's the problem with this speech. And that again, I think he fell prey to his own ambitions here. You know, he didn't have time. He wasn't sitting in on the speech writers as they crafted this. Maybe he should have been.
Yeah.
Okay, because I think he's further center, if not left of center, than the people that wrote this. You know, it feels like some moderate, or maybe he himself, maybe he is the one that got the path to citizenship inserted. And then, you know, McAllister, McAuliffe, whatever, and Stephen Miller were like, okay, yeah, well, we're going to bury that.
But you know,
let's talk about what these people really are.
But let's just pretend for a second that he did want that, okay? He should be tweeting that. He should be pushing that more than anything. That, yes, this was, I didn't write this speech. Well, he's not going to concede to that.
He's not going
to
do that.
But this is what he wants. I mean, maybe in a memoir somewhere down the road. And I mean somewhere down the road, like very soon down the road, because the dude's...
No, he should do it now.
Yeah, he should do it quickly.
I agree. He should be more out in front of this, because you know what? The buck stops here.
Yeah. Well, so beyond...
Believe it or not, folks, there was more than immigration discussed. Yeah,
exactly. So moving on from immigration. So we did talk quite a bit about, as any president would do, hey, here's what has been happening. And he, obviously, a lot of the accomplishments that he has had, and I don't want to say he has these accomplishments because this is what happens post-recession. And the tax cut hasn't done anything. I mean, it has spurred the economy. There's obviously a what do they call it? Is it bearish or bullish? Look bullish. Bullish look on the market. Post this being
bear is a downturn.
Yes, bear is a downturn. We've unemployment's at the lowest it's been. African American unemployment has been the lowest it's been in. That was a interesting, less interesting statistic, as it was the response from the Black Caucus that was there. Also, the $8 trillion in wealth, the stock market booming, and he did say wages are going up. I don't have statistics in front of me. I think most Americans would say, whose?
I don't have enough data to respond one way or the other.
I don't either. Merely anecdotal. But here's what didn't get said. Now, I could feel myself as the president was saying, you will see there's these deductions there. You will see more money in your paycheck. And I can say, yes, I will see more money in my paycheck. Will I see oodles of Scrooge McDuck piles of cash in my bank account? No. But, that's true. But what wasn't said, and he didn't need to say this because these people already know. He needed to convince the American people that what they did was good. And he had to do it because, A, there's a midterm coming up. And, B, most Americans, if you go look at polling, never approved of this tax reform bill in the first place.
What I wonder why.
Yeah. So what
might not have had anything to do with the nonstop torrent of mainstream media coverage.
That could have been. Could have been.
Because, one of the disingenuous points was, well, your taxes are going to rise. Do you know what year they used, for instance, the Huffington Post? You know what year they used to back that claim up? 2027.
Yeah, I was going to say 2026 or 2027.
That means if this law, is not extended in a new Congress, with a two-thirds majority, then it will expire in 10 years. That's a very disingenuous thing to say, because then your tax, right, the tax law will refer to what it is prior to this tax law. So, of course, your taxes are going to go up.
Yeah. And again, that's it's a little dishonest when you're framing it. It's just as dishonest as, a president saying something blanketed about any sort of policy, but it seems like it's going to happen overnight.
That's true, but the media they hold themselves certainly on a higher pedestal. They have the media, period, whether it's mainstream or mod state, has an obligation. And they twisted the truth on that. I mean, come on.
Well, and it's funny because in John Kennedy's dissent, he mentioned that sort of thing. Like, we don't have to lose growth. Or we don't have to gain growth by taxpayers paying for it. Or we don't need to pay for it. We don't need to lower corporate tax rate. And
it's a very good soundbite. I look forward to listening to it myself.
It's a good speech.
He gave a good speech as a Kennedy.
Yeah. So what I said before, here's the people that didn't need to hear that this was going to work. And that's the top 5% people, the wealthiest people in the United States. Because that $8 trillion in wealth that he's talking about, that overwhelmingly goes to the rich. And I know, unfortunately, it's not because I'm center left or I'm anything. It's just, that's the way it works. That's how stock.
So how do you feel about the corporate rate?
How do I feel?
Does that affect, I don't know, Devenny Welline Limited at all?
It does. Now, I'm not really talking about the corporate tax rate. I'm talking about wealth development and wealth gain from stock markets. It's kind of what he didn't say. He's touting this and lauding this this $8 trillion in gains and wealth in the stock market at record prices. That's great. I mean, even I benefit from that a bit because I've got money in a 401k, I've got money in a Roth IRA, and I've got money in the thrift savings plan. I'm lucky because I'm not $100,000 in student debt, and I'm also was able to put money away. So it does help me. It doesn't help me. I mean, it's any sort of investment, any sort of compound interest, any sort of dividend helps. Any percentage, 9% interest return or 9% interest is great. I mean, that does benefit me. But that $8 trillion in wealth, you have to remember where that goes. And I'm not advocating for, you know, redistribution of wealth. I'm not advocating for any of that. I'm just saying when people take this point blank and it's like, oh my gosh, yeah, the economy is doing amazing. Look at all this wealth we've created. You have to stop and say, how, we've talked about this on Mod State over and over and over, the American people. And Donald Trump did do it in this speech. He talked directly to the American people. He did his best to talk to all Americans and try to unify all Americans. And that was good. But there's things that are there, obviously, in the State of the Union, it's not all black and white. And this is where you'll see dissents, and this is what he'll see when he wakes up tomorrow and he watches all the mainstream media news outlets. They will say, yes, he mentioned $8 trillion in wealth, but where's that money going? It's going to people like him. And it's not, that's great, but to go ahead and say that wages are rising, are they? And I hope that what he could have done was said this tax reform bill, like to explain to the American people the theory behind a 21% corporate tax rate. Now, he did say Apple's coming back to the United States, but he didn't frame it well enough. It wasn't framed well enough to say this 21% corporate tax rate, this is what's happening. This is how it's going to affect you. This is how companies are going to be able to have more savings at the end of the year.
What would you have him say?
That's exactly what I have him say. I wouldn't necessarily just say, hey, there's $8 trillion in wealth, stock market's booming, that's obvious measure of the growth in our overall economy, and things are great. Because there's still a lot of Americans out there that are like, what the hell are you talking about? Like, where? Now, there's a lot of Americans that are happy to work, and there's lots of Americans that are working, but they're working two jobs. They, you know, they have trying to make ends meet. They can't afford homes. I mean, that's part of the American dream. And I think he could have framed it that way. I think he could have said, this is going to specifically help your dream as an American to do, you know, have the home you want, to be able to have affordable health care, affordable housing, and a living wage. I think when we talk about missed moments, I feel like it was a bit of a missed moment. He could have explained that. And I think someone like me, who's researched this over and over, when I hear stuff like that, the $8 trillion in wealth, you know, I see.
I mean, it was true.
It is true. It is true, but
he didn't say where it was going.
Exactly. I mean, when you see all those just unbelievably wealthy businessmen that are sitting in the chamber, it's like, yeah, it's going to them.
You know, I envy them, but I don't begrudge them.
No, and I have this written in my notes right here. I'm not. Where did I put it?
I know you're not arguing to punish success.
Exactly. That's what I said. I'm not. I'm absolutely
like I was
not,
there.
Yeah, it is creepy. I am not saying. So in John Kennedy's dissent, he said I'm paraphrasing here. He said in America, where the average CEO makes 300 times more than the average line worker, that is wrong. He said that is wrong. And
how long did both go to school?
What's that?
How long did both go to school?
It's a fair point. And I'm not arguing that. I think my point is I maybe take a hard line to what he says there and say, look, I don't know that you can say that it's wrong. I don't know that it's fair to say it's wrong. Can we say that there's a gap? Or that there's obviously some sort of inequality here. You know,
yes, there is. There's also a certain amount of the ball bouncing your way. I mean, life is not fair. Sure. Okay, do I think we need to increase the opportunity for people to go to school? But I think there's something to be said that we haven't mentioned here. But in fairness, President Obama also endorsed this as well. there is an increased need for vocational schools. Not everybody's meant to get a four-year degree to get a master's and or a doctorate. Not everybody's meant to be Alan Mulally and go from Boeing to turning Ford around.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Well, you're right.
To suggest that those individuals that get a doctorate ought to be paid the same as line workers. Sorry, folks, this is not a socialist republic, nor should it be.
Yes, and this is
an element of that.
Yes, these are a bit. I mean, again, I'm just pointing these things out. There are hard lines here, and when he did mention vocational schools, which I think is an amazing model if it's done correctly and done sustainably throughout the United States. I mean, Germany is a prime example of creating a environment where a master at his craft, like for example, the welder, the African-American welder that he brought up during the speech. So he pointed out a small business owner and then had one of his employees stand up as well who got a job.
That was a brilliant moment.
It was.
Introduced the owners and then introduced a success story amongst the
yes.
workers.
And that's good. I that's a great story. I mean, however, what Germany does in a really good way is they honor that profession and they celebrate that profession and they recognize that not everyone's going to be the engineer, but people are going to be and want and can have a celebrated career as the person that puts the vision of the engineer and the architect to work. And
you know what you're alluding to, though?
What?
You're alluding to culture. And Americans now, I mean, look at what we celebrate. Athletes,
pop
stars, and movie stars. I don't think that's the president's fault.
It is not the president's fault. And I don't put this on the president in the sense that this is his fault, that this is the case. It's not.
That's in our DNA.
It is.
Is to be, you know, at the top. Unfortunately, most Americans do not want to do what their forefathers did, what their fathers did, 9 times out of 10, to grind their way up. I mean, like by Michael Bob, who's council parish chair, parish council chairman of Jefferson Parish. His father-in-law, Mr. Garrett, who last I checked is still alive in his 90s, started out driving a forklift at the port system and then ended up retiring as president of it.
Yeah. Or
people, our generation, let's be real.
Yeah. Well, even my dad.
Do that.
Yeah. Even my dad, who hopefully we'll have on, he'll be in town, we'll do a little snippet for the Rust Belt. You know, he started as an apprentice electrician and worked his way up through the company to be vice president. And that's an American dream. I don't know how prevalent that is today, but however, that is, if that's something that we want to recapture, I'm all for it. And it does take.
Jürgen Klinsmann got his degree in. The U.S. men's national team manager for folks out there that don't follow soccer. Well, former, sadly.
Sadly.
Didn't get a degree. He got a certificate as an apprentice. It's called being a journeyman. That's right.
Yeah, journeyman. Yeah.
He got a journeyman's certificate in Germany for bakery.
Really?
He's a baker.
And then
people would be like, I'm sure he works at a very nice sort of shop. It's a very snobby country.
Yeah, we don't celebrate those professions. And I do think, you know, what Donald Trump's point with that is, and whether he realizes it or not, you know, if you do want to celebrate change culture and celebrate these type of journeyman positions, these trades positions, these manufacturing positions, then you do need to bring manufacturing back to the United States. And I think he did bring that up to a degree in the speech as well.
I feel like he went in the overall right direction. And I'm just going to guess that he wants to go in an even better direction. I hope to get that clip that you and I made into the hands of some people in his administration and say, look, you don't have to give me any credit, but if you want a little help, I don't want to insult the president here, okay? He doesn't need me, clearly. But if you want a little help maybe framing your messaging a little better, ..
Yeah. And I think that's it, really. It's framing the message. And I just don't know that the message was framed. You know, obviously, honoring American heroes, and I said this in the beginning, and I'm punching myself in the face for this now, I am not trying to discount like the heroic action that every one of these individuals.
I don't think you did.
That's not the point.
You didn't insult anybody.
But you know, I think beyond that, he had the opportunity, intertwined with all those stories, to have a more focused, unified message that I think everyone could have been maybe breathed a little sigh of relief, like, okay, maybe this year is not going to be as chaotic as last year. And I mean that in terms of culture, in terms of the tribalism that we see that is intertwined within the juxtaposition of our culture in the identity politics that we have. And I don't know that we're walking away breathing that sigh of relief. And I think that's maybe what I was hoping for and maybe where a lot of my frustration stems from.
I agree. There were a few missed moments. And as far as the culture goes, there's no way that he's going to be able to undo that. But people do tune into the State of the Union. It's definitely an opportunity to not necessarily set the tone for the nation, but to set a course in terms of the spirit of the way. I know people do listen to it, and it could be more impactful. I know. So I hate to say this, maybe next year. I think his heart was in the right place. I feel like, as far as his words go, okay, and God knows we can't have a double standard here because we damn him for his prior words. So what's fair is fair then.
Yeah.
Based on his speech, I think his heart was in the right place. I don't feel like they quite punched it into the end zone, if you will. Yeah.
No, I agree with you. Well, let's wrap this up by playing a game. Not a game, but an exercise. Let's find a couple things in this speech, because I felt like this last 45 minutes I've been lampooning the president's speech. A couple good things that I heard from here that I was surprised to hear and am hopeful for.
Go ahead.
So the first one, obviously, is there's two, but I'll start with the first one. And I mentioned it earlier, and that is the prison reform. I hope that partisanship that we heard in the speech, and we've just more than the speech we've just been having. I hope that that's something he can follow through with, because I think you and I have talked about this pretty heavily on the podcast. It's like a civil rights issue, and I hope that that's something he does follow through with. And I don't expect it to happen this year. I hope it happens over the presidency, where there is sort of reform, there is a reform that those people who have paid their debts, especially nonviolent drug offenses, those who have felonies because of that, weren't hurting anyone except for themselves, are able to have some sort of redemption in society and are able to chart in a second chance, you know, be able to buy a home or be able to rent a property and not based on their past egregious offenses after their debt to society has been paid. And
yeah, I mean, suicide's illegal. So if you're going to make people live, then give them the opportunity to redeem themselves.
Exactly. So that's the first thing. The second thing that I was happy he addressed, as he should address, because this crisis has actually worsened under his presidency. And I don't think it's because of him. It just has happened that way. And that is the opiate epidemic. And unfortunately, this is supposed to be what's good. I was a little disheartened about the notion to, go after drug dealers and drug pushers. I agree with it. However, that doesn't stop the opiate epidemic. People will still be addicted. But I was hopeful for his message of getting these people, bringing that mental health issue of addiction and dual diagnosis, which is like depression and addiction, or anxiety and addiction, or you name it, and addiction, and getting people help. And even by bringing it up, I hope that that lightens the stigma, or can potentially be a path to lighten the stigma and illuminate the issue of addiction that is plaguing this nation and is touching, 6 degrees of separation. I think every American can point to somebody who struggled with this, even if they're in denial or not. So those are two things that I was happy to hear, and I thought he was fairly on message with both of them. So is there anything you?
I agree with you on the point of inmates, former inmates who pay their debt to society. I mean, it's only recently that the majority of these individuals had the right to vote again. Some states, they still don't, which I think is morally reprehensible.
I agree.
So they've paid their debt to society as decided by a trial jury of their peers. That's wrong. So I agree with you there. I think that it was an important point that he lauded in terms of regulation. No, I'm not a libertarian. I don't think that all regulation is bad, but I think it's a step in the right direction to not hamstring our businesses. I thought that was a great point that he brought up. And also, I'll take a bit of a different one here. I applaud him pressing on in the face of, as he put it, dozens of nations in their resolution at the UN. I applaud him for having the guts, regardless of who it was pandering to. Donald Trump is a man that doesn't stand to gain a significant dollar in office. And I say significant as how much wealthier can you become beyond a billionaire?
Very true.
Okay. So I applaud him for recognizing Jerusalem as the rightful, in my opinion, capital of Israel. Those are my two.
Okay. No, I like it. And
I mean, I had to choose something a little different.
Yeah. Well, you could have agreed, but I think we all have our.
I mean, I agree with you on both yours. Yeah,
and I think we have some minor disagreements about Jerusalem, but it isn't so much.
That's what keeps this interesting.
It sure does. Well, I think we've done a pretty succinct breakdown and maybe a visceral emotional response more than I necessarily wanted it to be for this breakdown. But you know, you got to go with that.
It was supposed to be.
This is what
remove human emotion from this. You may as well let AI do it.
Sure. I mean, this is what you get. This is what you get when we
let Dr. Watson and Cortana do this.
Exactly. Well, with that, my friends, you know where to find us, modstate.com, for all of our op-ed and opinion pieces, as well as links to the podcast and to all of our social media outlets. You can just log in right at the top of the webpage. There's all the links. If you're on your cellular device, you can scroll all the way to the bottom for the podcast links. But you can obviously find us anywhere you get your podcasts. We appreciate you tuning in and hope you had a wonderful State of the Union. So until next time,
okay.
We'll see you.